Supposed to.
It's an old minnow. People have fast the first Sun Monday, Thursday, and Monday of the first full week of the month after in Tobin as a kapara for all the chatoi midiroviyantim. I have too much time, so we'll say slichos and we'll say slichos. Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum Mechanun, Erech Apayim, Rav Chasid, VMS, Yotzer Chasid, Lalafin, Nasi, Avon, Rav Asha, Vechato, Avin, Akei, Vesolachta, Lavon, Einu, Lechata, Seinu, Nechaltanu. So it's not so much of a minig anymore, but some people still don't know. It's a minig in Shiva. Then whoever wants to say slichos, say slichos. Whoever wants to fast, fast. So they still have it in some yeshivas. It's called behap. So my minig is not to say slichos, but obviously if you're in a place that they say yud gimel, you have to stop and say yud gimel. So we'll have a shir as best as we can, because we have a loud cousin. And when they get to yud gimel, we'll stop and say slichos. We have the nice lach to keep around. Okay. So in the middle of behap, we're going to learn a little bit of Ramban's Aladara. Ramban and Parshas Lech Lecha. So Avram comes to Eretz Yisrael, and he's Vayikra B'Shem Hashem, and he calls in the name of Hashem. So Onkelos interprets this to mean that he davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Rashi picks up on Onkelos, what is Avram davening about? Nothing's happening in the beginning of the Parsha, so he's davening for the future. He envisions all the places that he's traveling, what will happen to the Jewish people, so he davens for what will happen in Shem, for the brothers of Yosef. But the Ramban says, Vayikra B'Shem Hashem is what we typically associate it with. That he espoused, he preached, he proselytized about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and he built up his back to serve as almost as a stage for people to gather for him to teach people about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Now what's interesting about this Ramban is two things. First of all, the Ramban says Avram tried that already in Ur Kasdim, but no one listened. In fact, not that no one listened, but they incarcerated him and they wanted to possibly execute him. Now that he gets Eretz Yisrael, all of a sudden people are listening. That's why the Torah doesn't record his efforts in Ur Kasdim, because they failed. Only records his efforts in Eretz Yisrael. Ramban doesn't tell us why he was successful in Eretz Yisrael rather than in Ur Kasdim. It could be, and this sounds like it's a little implicit in Ramban, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him a bracha. Before in Ur Kasdim, Hashem didn't participate. In Lech Lecha, Hashem says, V'avarcha mevarchecha. And that doesn't just mean people that give you a bracha. It means people that are accepting your ideas. I will give them a bracha. So people who accepted Avram's ideas in Eretz Yisrael, they started to prosper. They started to get rich and wealthy and more successful. So this is how it caught on. The Kodesh Baruch Hu gave Avram a heftacha. In Ur Kasdim, Avram was hitting a brick wall. He kept talking to people. No one wanted to listen. In Eretz Yisrael, people started to listen. That listening entitled them to Kodesh Baruch Hu's bracha. And therefore, people started to grab on my brother, and I upon Avayikra. Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum, Machanon, Erechapayim, Vechased, VMS, Vechased, Malufim, Vesevon, Vafesha, Vechata, Avinakei, Vesavachdal, Avoninu, Vulachatazenu, Vechapanu. Is there a different reason? Is it that the people in Eretz Yisrael are in a different spiritual sphere and they're more inclined to listen to ideas from Kodesh Baruch Hu? Namely, is Eretz Yisrael a independently suited place for receiving a Kodesh Baruch Hu's presence and knowledge, or is it only once Avram enters the land and builds the Jewish people that we make it then? We believe there's a metaphysical reality in Eretz Yisrael, that you're under the Shechina, and you're under the Kisei HaKavod, and even if you're a Kanani or a Chiti or any of these other nations, you're more apt to listen to Avram speaking about Hashem than your average Iraqi and average Jordanian and Saudi Arabia, whatever Charan and Arkastin were. So it's fascinating that Avram first starts to build a Mizbeach and preach here in Eretz Yisrael, whereas he tried it in Ur Kasdim, it was unsuccessful, so the Torah mutes all that activity. Yitzchak does the same. We follow Yitzchak's career. Yitzchak also builds Mizbechos when he gets to new territories, in particular to the Pushtim. Yaakov never does. We never see Yaakov building Mizbech and being part of Hashem Hashem. He has one Mizbech in Vayishlach, he calls it Hashem Yisi, it's about the Nes Hashem performed for him. So why doesn't Yaakov build this Mizbech to preach about a Kodesh Baruch Hu? So Ramban in Parshas Lech Lecha says, because Yaakov is more inward turning, because he had a family now. So his focus was trying to spread the presence and the values of Hashem within his family. And then once that family would become a clan, and once that clan would become a people, and the people would radiate those values outwards to the rest of the world. So Yaakov is in a point of inflection, where instead of trying to preach to the entire world, let's try to consolidate a people that live Hashem's values, entrench those values in that people. These are two different approaches. We're still at the stage, more or less, in our arc of Jewish history, where I think we have to invest massively in building our peoplehood, building our ideas, building our religious commitments, even though one day we hope that all that will radiate to an entire world. And it's, look, you're an Olah Goyim, why are you wasting your time in a mountain in Shul HaRetzion? Go preach in England, go preach in Argentina, go preach to the Gentiles. And at this stage in our life, I think it's legitimate for people to take that approach, but our massive investment has to be the act of internalization. Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum Echanun, Erech Apayim, Rev Chesed, VMS, Ratzel Chesed, Lelofim, Lasealon, Vefesha, Vechatoa, Vinake, Vesalachta, Lavoninu, Lechatasenu, Nechatanu. Okay, so let's move to another Ramban. This is just a piyutza. It's a little hard to hear, but we'll keep going. Okay, the Ramban. What's the matter? This is not much of the Ramban ads. We'll just read one line of the Ramban ads. Why do we spend so much time learning the details of these four kings and the five kings? It seems like a real interlude that breaks the flow of the story of Avraham Avinu. Again, there's a part of it that's Lot, because Lot gets captured, and we see Avraham not abandoning his family. Part of it is seeing that Avraham is a greedy person, and he's offered riches and luxury and reward. He says he's starting his moral presentation to be someone that doesn't want money and avarice, doesn't want free lunch. But the details are just too elaborate to just justify it. Oh, just so we can see about Lot being reparated, you can see that Avraham is withholding or disavowing any money. So the Ramban actually quotes a message. It's a message that not many people are aware of. But these four kings represent the four empires, the four Melachim that Daniel speaks about in the two dreams in Sefer Daniel. And the Medrash actually associates the names, Tidal Melech Goyim, Alasar Melech, the names, these are names in Bavel, Paras or Madai, Yavon, and Rome. And just to give you a little bit of a synopsis of what the four empires are, the four empires are four different cultures / religions that embody themselves in empires, and they come to dominate the world, and they also pose moral and religious challenges to the world. Babel posed a challenge to the world. Paras and Madai posed a moral religious challenge to the world. Yavon posed a moral religious challenge to the world. Rome will speak about it in a moment. The Jewish people, of course, face off against these four empires. We face off against these four empires. We're protecting humanity against their moral religious challenges. And not just, we don't face off with Iceland. We don't face off with the Mayan dynasty. We're facing off with the four dominant empires that shaped the arc of history. And by defeating their evil, their morally challenging, dangerous ideas, we also filter them and allow their ideas to settle into humanity and affect humanity. Greece didn't just challenge humanity, but the ideas became absorbed into the world only because we stood up to their challenge and we filtered them. Because if Greece would have just dominated humanity in its purest form, then it would have unsettled the religious spirit. So there are four empires, and history begins with the war of the four empires, and history is framed by the four empires, and history will probably end with some form of military battle or other form of confrontation. So history is bracketed by this battle for values of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and sometimes there are malicious, larger, dominant empires that adopt value systems that challenge HaKadosh Baruch Hu's presence. So these are not just wars for war's sake, there's a moral struggle that these international wars represent. Okay, so who are the four kings? Amraphel Melech Shinar, Shinar is in Babel. Aryoch Melech Elasar, according to Ramban at least, Elasar is in Madai. Kedar Laomer Melech Elam, Elam the Ramban traces to Greece. I'm not going to have to get into the details of what each of these cities represent. But Bitidal Melech Goyim. Goyim is a strange name, right? It's not a city, it's many nations. So Ramban, again, based on the Medrash, says Goyim Tidal, that king Tidal ruled many different nations. That's why he was called Tidal Melech Goyim. He didn't just rule Elasar or Aryoch, he ruled many different nations that gathered together. And that template reappears later in history, where Rome, as opposed to the earlier empires that are much more ethnically integrated, Rome was a conglomeration of many different tribes that gathered in the Italian peninsula. And not just many tribes that gathered to create Rome, wasn't as ethnically integrated as Greece was, but Rome is not just Rome. Rome casts a heavy influence on all of Western civilization. So all of the last 2,000 years is influenced by Rome, culturally, politically, and religiously, by Adonai, Adonai, El Rachum Bechanun, Erech Apayim, Rav Chesed, VMS, Rotzer Chesed, Lo Alefim, Nasi Avon, Mofesha, Vechata Berakei, Bisolachna, Avoneinu, Lechataseinu, Nechaltanu. So Rome becomes an archetype, not a nation, it becomes an archetype of Goyim, because you can feel Rome's influence today, culturally, politically, intellectually, but of course religiously also. It was in the 3rd century, Ramadas Christianity. Essentially, Roman Christianity emerged in the Edict of Milan, and now Rome becomes an archetype of Goyim, not just a specific place, but Tidal, who represents Rome, he's not Roman, but he's that slot in the early part of history, he rules over a conglomeration of nations, so Rome becomes that Tidal Melech Goyim. As the Ramban writes, I'm reaching the Lashon of the Ramban, why does Tidal Melech Goyim represent Rome? Let me find this here very quickly, because I shouldn't think I'm lying to you. Tidal Melech Goyim zu Malchus Hazu, Western civilization, Ramban's writing in the 12th century. She machteves tironia mikala umosola. It reigns over all the worlds, it influences all the worlds, or it challenges the Jews by seeding its ideas in the entire world and its hostility towards the Jews, classic Christian hostility towards the Jews. One final Ramban. When Avram says, I'm not sure, and I don't have any children, what are you going to give me? But this is a very difficult part of Parshas Lech. Why does Avram trust Hashem? He's been given multiple haftachos, and yet he returns and questions that Kodesh Baruch Hu. So the Ramban, and again, this is what makes the Ramban so seminal and so fundamental, Avram in this story is teaching us about Amunah. And we know some of these ideas because Avram taught it to us and because the Torah recorded. Avram had two concerns. Number one, I know that you made me promises, and I know that my schar is great, but that's an olam haba. How will my reality be an olam hazeh? Not everyone gets their schar in olam hazeh. Not everyone is, as Chazal says, zachul l'shtei shulchanos. Just because you're a tzaddik doesn't mean you're going to have an easy time in this world. That's obvious to us. We've dealt with theodicy. We've dealt with the meaning of evil in the world. We deal with tzaddik v'ra'ala, rasha v'tovlo. But Avram is starting to build the foundations of belief and faith. So he doesn't know that yet. Or he's questioning. He says, okay, I know that my schar and olam haba is assured, but I don't have children in this world. I'm still struggling. You promised me that I'm going to have and in the end, of course, he is Zalchur Shnei Shulchanis, because by Parshas Chayisara, Hashem Berachas Avram Bakol, Avram has an easier world. So Avram is probing what will happen to me in this world. He's not questioning Hashem's Haftacha. He just wants to know, just theologically, what does it mean when you give me Haftacha? Will it be delayed to the next world, or will it be in this world? And that's why Chazal contrasts Avram and Eov, because Eov was a Tzadik Urala. Yeah, Avram was a Tzadik B'Tovlo. So Avram isn't questioning Hashem's promise. He's just saying, tell me, how does it implement itself? What are the impacts of this world? Then Ramban says, but wait a second, Hashem already promised you to have children in this world, so even that question is a dubious question. So then Ramban says, well, Avram's second concern was, maybe some of my past deeds were chatayim. I'm not a malicious person, I'm not a sinner, I'm not a rasha, but I exposed my wife to an unpleasant situation with Parumah, with Zion, by telling a fib. I killed people. Now, yeah, that may have been something necessary, but just because something is necessary doesn't mean it doesn't have toxic impact upon you, right? He had to fight. Hashem warned him to fight for Zion. He had to save love. But at the end of the day, he had blood on his hands. And that's, at the very least, we wouldn't call it manslaughter, but homicide, not even manslaughter, but you still have blood on your hands. And maybe my chait b'shogeg has affected my standard. And this teaches us that tzaddikim are not, they don't just judge themselves by intent, they judge themselves by behavior, things that were unfortunate that you had to do but still could affect your reality. So Avram is starting to question, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this is all Mishra, but will my schar suffer because I have blood on my hands, because I fell in the Zara, or other mistakes that I made? We'll see Yaakov and Mirth Hashem a little bit later in Parshas Vayishlach experience similar questions. But there, at least in the Pasuk, it sounds like he's less concerned with the Chatayim, he's more concerned with Katati Mikala Chasadim, that I've received too much, I've been there so long for me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, maybe this has depleted my schar, maybe. So our avos are helping us consider schar v'onesh, tzadik v'ra'lo. We have a long, long masara, and we can question this and probe this and quote what the Rambam says, but the avos is trying to feel the way they did not. Avram is asking innocent. He says, how will this impact Olam Hazeh? I know you have problems with Olam Hazeh, but my hands are dirty. I have to get my hands dirty. It's not my fault, but how will this impact my behavior? Hashem says, don't worry. That's part of the operating costs. I want you to go to war. Unfortunately, people die in war, but you made the right move. So three Rambans. One Ramban about building a Mizbeach and proselytizing the name of Hashem, which Avram had tried in Ur Kasdim, but somehow was more successful in Eretz Yisrael. The second Ramban about the four kings and the four empires, beginning of history, the middle of history, the end of history. And the final Ramban about probing how schar and onesh is allocated by Hashem. You're welcome to stay. You should leave for them when they are. It's open. Daddy has your back.
Much better.
Yeah? Yeah. Good. Baruch Hashem. Good morning, Sam. Good morning. Very good. Good to hear. The shiur today is 12. Okay, so we'll finish up the stretch at 12 o'clock. Tomorrow there's a special program. Elections, a special shiur, and so we'll leave that day open. Don't do the second one. I just was looking. It's too hard for you. If you finish the one before them, I'll add a few other makaros. This is really strange. We're going to focus on the different part anyway. There's so much that I see yesterday. I started wedding, so it's like you're teaching. You're teaching Svetsvega. How many shirts are you giving? 10? Come from the mirror or something. So like, I was really not knew what he was talking about. Yeah. So, we're not going to give 10 shirts, but we could. Okay. 10, 12-ish. Oh, okay. We'll get out some more in my car.